This is the last of this batch of Cambridge interviews. There may be some more. And it's the end of a couple of days here in Cambridge. Cambridge has always been an odd place for me, close enough to home that age 10 it was to hospital here that I was referred when the optician realised that I had wonky eyes. But not for us a place to go lightly, a place to travel to which took commitment. When I applied to university here, I got as far as the winter pool, but I didn't get in. Something which somehow wasn't okay until I was being interviewed for a postdoctoral job here, and the professor expressed his disbelief that I had not been accepted as an undergraduate. But I am not at all sure as an undergraduate it would have been an environment in which I would have flourished. So this visit I have stayed with a friend in a house not 100 yards from the house in which I stayed in 1989 when I came to do the mission where I met Stephen Turner. Whenever I came to visit Stephen in Cambridge all those years ago, I would bump into somebody that I knew that he didn't, every time I visited. So Cambridge kind of remains the place I have always belonged and never belonged at the same time. I'm in the coffee shop of St Andrew's Baptist Church, which is now called Living Stones, with Stephen Turner. And our first question is, where and when did we first meet?
We met here, actually, upstairs here.
Which is why we're in the noisy coffee shop, because we wanted to come back to where we were, where we met for the first time.
Exactly. It was in 1989, I believe, some time ago.
Yeah.
And we were doing a mission to summer language students in Cambridge.
I was trying to remember yesterday whether I did 3 weeks or 2 weeks of it.
I don't remember, sorry.
No, can't remember either. It is a long time ago. Next question then, do you drink tea?
I do drink tea. I drink a lot of tea. I don't drink coffee at all. No coffee. I never liked coffee as a teenager, and I trained myself to like it for sort of social reasons, and then I decided it was giving me migraines, so maybe I knew something all along. So I don't drink coffee anymore, I just drink tea. I drink decaf tea now as well.
These are all signs of age, Stephen, we must be getting old.
I think we must.
I don't drink Rioja anymore.
You don't drink Rioja, okay.
No.
And do you drink other red wines or just...?
Occasionally. But I just really don't like Rioja.
Okay.
So when I got to about 41, 42, I thought, if I don't like Rioja, why am I drinking it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm more beer than wine myself. But.
Yeah, I don't drink very much wine, actually, now. So you drink tea, and your favourite sort of tea?
I always try and drink decaf, so if decaf's available, which it is, actually, much more and more widely recently. At work I drink decaf Earl Grey. I do like Lapsang actually as a kind of treat, but mostly decaf ordinary tea or decaf Earl Grey. And I always drink it very milky, much milkier than most people.
I'm trying to remember my 5 questions now because I haven't got them written down in front of me, which I normally do. So the question I'm asking everybody, whatever their background or anything at all is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I've been thinking a lot about this since you sent me your questions. I don't actually see it dying or sleeping particularly. I can only answer for kind of my subculture, if you like. But I see a lot of Christians around still. I think it's not going away. I guess what I do think is it's kind of lost its preeminent place in society. I think it's become kind of just one voice among many, and in many ways, I guess it's a voice that people don't respect as much as they used to. I mean, people still turn to the church in times of personal or community crisis, but in terms of kind of the church setting the moral standards, I think people in many ways feel that the church is behind on many moral issues, especially issues of kind of gender, sexuality, things like that, and that the church, that society has actually moved ahead in terms of moral standards in some ways.
Yeah, I've thought of another question, which is a bit of a subsidiary to that.
Okay.
Which is to do with the kind of evangelical Christianity that we were involved with mm-hmm. as teenagers. Mm-hmm. I guess, what do you think maybe were some of the best and worst features of that when you look back on it?
Wow. I think that's a big question.
Well, I'm asking it partly because it was interesting for me revisiting Nick Moyer yesterday, who was my Cypher House Party leader. And of course, when I went to Cypher House Party, it was still illegal for women to be ordained.
But
and
it
that's
was,
the
yes.
culture from which I had to grow from. So.
You told me you wanted to be a vicar before we had women in the Church of England.
I did,
you
yeah.
did.
Yeah. And I kind of knew that.
Yeah. Without, even as a teenager, you knew that.
Yeah. Which is strange to think yeah. that at that time I kind of really had a vocation to do something which was still illegal.
Yes.
And which a lot of my really close friends and people I looked up to disagreed with.
Yes. And I mean, in many churches, that's still, I mean, they still don't have women's ordination.
Mm. So I guess I think that's probably one of the things which we've moved away from.
Yes, I mean, I think both the strength and weakness of the evangelical churches, I guess, is a clear adherence to the Bible and them taking the Bible as the center of the faith. I mean, it brings a sort of clarity. It brings a certainty that the doctrines aren't going to change over time, I guess. And that the beliefs are the same as the beliefs that people had in previous centuries, and that's in some ways very powerful. In other ways, when society moves on and recognises that some of the beliefs may have in fact been wrong, I mean, it makes it very hard to move beyond that. I'm finding these difficult questions because I'm trying to sort of defend the church at the same time, as you know, I've moved away from the church and I mean, yes, there's a lot of things I still respect about the church. I mean, trying to care for those in need, whether it's emotional need or poverty or whatever, all over the world, and remembering those who are forgotten by other people. In other ways, I think the church has, in some ways, I think, lost its way and not kept up with. At its best, I mean, I think society has improved in moral standards. I mean, in many ways it hasn't, but in some particular areas I think it has. And I think with a sort of globalisation, information age, you can look all over the world and you can talk to people all over the world and you can recognise their experiences are all different. And I think the range of human experience is wider than I saw at the time when I was involved in the church. I think there's a much greater recognition now of people all over the world and people in all different situations. And I think the church does still try and constrain people to a very narrow model. And
That's really interesting, because I think the Church of England in particular has moved hugely in the past, even in the past 10 years, on its stance and all sorts of things. And I don't know whether I'm keeping up necessarily, but I thought it was brilliant when I think it was last year, somebody asked Justin Welby about his and the Church's views on homosexuality, and he actually said, no pun intended, I can't give you a straight answer.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where I find myself on some things, having come from one culture, but understanding that actually I'm trying to discern what of that culture was really stuff which God cares about, and what of that culture was stuff which only humans care about. And I guess one of the analogies I was thinking of when you were speaking was about slavery. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was a huge cultural change for people to go from a church which believed in slavery to a church which didn't believe in slavery. Yes. And there's a whole kind of contextual shift in that. And I wonder if actually we're in that and experience some of those similar contextual shifts.
I think it might happen. I mean, if you look at the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa, who believed in apartheid at the time and very quickly moved away from that and publicly repented of it. I think the Church of England is certainly moving. Other churches, I mean, the Catholic Church and the evangelical churches in general aren't on that specific issue. The Church of England is. But it's a tricky issue because, I mean, then you've got some very problematic verses in the Bible. So what are you going to do about them?
But you have also problematic verses in the Bible which accept slavery, and you have problematic
yes.
verses in the Bible about women's leadership, and we've moved on from those because of the kind of way we do the hermeneutics of building bridges between the Bible and society.
But when you do that, I mean, what? I guess because I come from the evangelical tradition myself, I kind of struggle with what is left in the church if it rejects its beliefs. What is left? Why should I listen to the church rather than anyone else if the church is just coming along for the same ride as society is?
And I think that's one of the big questions that as practitioners we face in church leadership all the time. One thing I've found really interesting is how my children have grown up in a very different society to the society in which I grew up, with a different understanding of diversity and acceptance. I don't know if you've observed that in your children as well.
Oh, very much so, yes. Yes, I mean, the things which they just take for granted as things they shouldn't discriminate about. Which just didn't happen in our day.
I think generally it's a good thing. I think that they are much more understanding about who people are and what it means to be someone, an individual. They have, particularly around the issues of gender and sexuality and stuff. Mine are
yes.
at a particularly good school, I think, about that. In Cambridge, lots and lots of people go to church.
Yep.
But really high proportion of people going to church. Do you think that affects the city in a particular way?
I don't. I guess I was much more aware of it as a student. I mean, it's a very high student population go to church. I don't particularly see it in the city as a whole. I mean, obviously there is a large church-going population, but I'm not sure whether it's substantially different from other cities.
You wouldn't describe it as holier in any particular way?
Not visibly to me.
It's an interesting challenge for the church leaders in Cambridge, isn't it? If everybody goes to church, or lots of people go to church, but it isn't a different place. But I guess you've lived here for a long time, so you might not.
Yeah, maybe I haven't. Maybe I haven't observed the. I mean, obviously, you're in a rural situation. It's a very, very different situation. But
we're in this particular situation, which is in a different type of Christendom to an urban Christendom, I think, or the failure of urban Christendom,
right.
In that I can't do anything to get people to come to church on a Sunday morning.
Right.
And that's changed in the last 5 years, because I did, and then they went away again.
Right.
And then, but a third of our population come to church in the month before Christmas, which is huge fringe. So how does that tie up? How does that?
Yeah, I don't think that particularly happens here. I think it's.
How does that work?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
And I mean, I guess do they have a latent belief, or is it really just a sort of tradition to go to church at Christmas?
I think they must have some sort of latent belief, because I kind of feel that tradition would have died in some way. But I haven't grilled all 6,000 of them to give them all a questionnaire.
No.
Do you come to church sometimes because you believe
right,
it?
Right, of course.
Just think it's a nice thing to do, or you believe something, or you're looking for something, or because it's part of your corporate community identity, and does that mean it's faith or not? When you get to those sort of levels, I think people don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's one of our tricky things. So, probably the last question. I'm just waiting to see if that man will stop. He has stopped clashing the teapots. What's your favourite thing that begins with T?
Yeah, I struggled with this. You did warn me you're going to ask this question. Actually, T itself is quite high up on the list. I was going to say time, but one of your previous interviewees has already said time, so...
You can still say
no,
time.
No, I'm not going to say time. I have another one. Okay. I'm going to cheat a little bit and say two wheels. So I do a lot of cycling. I cycle. It's my main transport. It's my main leisure activity as well. I cycle 200 miles a week, roughly, on average. And it's how I clear my head as well. If I'm stressed, I, like, go out, do a quick 20 miles and come back feeling having forgotten it.
Do you do that thing which someone I knew who worked in Welling used to do, which was ride the long way round to work?
I totally do that. I live 5 miles from work, and I usually cycle between 20 and 25 miles to work. I take my son to school, he goes in early, and then I do a big loop before going to work. And then I go straight home, which is nice because you get a short ride home. So.
So very committed to your two wheels.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's going to be the end of the questions for the recording for today. They've been hard questions, so thank you for sharing them with us.
Thank
so
you,
thank you for coming.
Thank you.